that day I live in a dream.
Welcome to Only Trying to Help, the podcast where we try to help you be helpful to other people. I love when I have a guest who I haven't seen in a long time. And as we joined each other on Zoom today, my friend Valerie and I said, has it been what, like 13, 14, 15 years, something in that range? But I'm thrilled to be reconnecting with you today. And I'm going to let you introduce yourself to our audience.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to see you again and talk to you. My name is Valerie, and I am a cisgender female. I'm 48 years old, and I identify as a lesbian. I am a mother of two children. One is 13, one is 11. I had to think about that. And I'm a divorced and also engaged woman.
Okay. Yeah. And as we were reconnecting, I think the last time I saw you, you were pregnant with your first child. So your life has changed a lot, as has mine, but in different ways. And part of the reason we've reconnected now is I put this little call out for some help. I wanted to do an episode of the podcast about some of the well-meaning things people might do when they're trying to help a friend who's coming out. And you responded and so graciously offered your time today. And I guess we could just have like a little chat about that. I don't know what comes to mind for you, Valerie, about some of the things that, you know, people who meant well may have said or done as you were coming out. And maybe you could speak to like how much of that was actually helpful versus was some of it even maybe a little harmful. I'm going to let you kind of steer me here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and I feel really lucky in a way because I had a pretty good experience. I was at the end of a marriage to a man, and I had it was the end. It was clearly ending, and I had gone on this conference in Florida, and I met a woman, and I just knew, oh, this is gay, right? This is what I am. And I actually, nothing even happened on that trip. But I went home and I told my soon to be ex, you know, this is really happening. And in fact, I met a woman, and I wanted to let you know, because I, you know, need to be respectful and honest and truthful. And I remember I started a relationship with this person, and it lasted about 8 months, and it was very thrilling. One of my friends described it, one of my dear friends was like, it's like you're in adolescence again, you know, and that was not harmful. It felt right on, you know. And then I kept seeing this person. It was a very long distance relationship. Flights were involved and everything. And I remember one person in my world said to me, well, you know, you're not going to end up with this woman, right? Mm-hmm. And I just was kind of taken aback because I didn't need to hear that. And in fact, I didn't know if I was going to end up with that woman. So it was this, there was this moment of, I won't use the word demeaning because this is a loved one, and but it was a little condescending, and I remember feeling condescended to, and also I didn't want to be reduced to the idea of I'm just a woman getting out of a marriage. I don't really know how I feel. I don't really know what I want, and I'm not in charge of it. You know, I'm at the mercy of my own emotions, and I'm at the mercy of this new adolescence. I mean, it wasn't the same person who said that, but I remember feeling and saying, okay, well, you know, that may be, but, you know, let me stick to the part where I'm at. Let me live through this, and please just be glad for me and enjoy the ride with me, because that's what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you you have a nice way of sticking up for yourself that I don't know that a lot of people could like find that voice. But just to go back a couple of minutes, when you said you came back from this conference and you told your soon to be ex, you said that you wanted to share this news to be honest and truthful and respectful. Was that honest and truthful and respectful to him or to yourself or to both? Like, who were you trying to respect?
Oh, I was trying to respect the idea of, I guess, myself and him in a way. And the marriage at that point was ending. The instigator of was infidelity on my spouse's part. So I wanted to, in a way, you know, claim, you know, lay claim, stake my claim, whatever the expression is, to the fact that, you know, people can be honest. People don't cheat. They don't have to cheat. And that, because at that point, this person was still saying, let's go to marriage counseling. Let's go to, you know, try to patch this together. We have two kids, et cetera, et cetera. And so when I went and I met this person, it was so fascinating because I had texted a couple of my close friends right when I went on this conference. And before I met this person, this woman, and I had said, God, you know, I wish I could be hypnotized so that I knew what I really wanted. And then that night I met this person. And to me, that was like this beautiful, positive omen. And I knew, cause I knew I wasn't going to stay in the marriage. I mean, I did not want to be, live any further and then know later on in my life that I was the woman who stayed. And that was kind of my life's work in a relationship, was like getting over infidelity, you know. And he had always known that I had identified as bisexual when we met. And I mean, like I said, I'm 48. We've been out of this marriage now for 4 years. And I mean, it took a while to get divorced, but we've separated and lived apart for 4 years. And we met when I, in 1994, when I was 18 or 19. So for me to say back then I was bisexual, you know, that's fine. But then I committed to this man for 25 years almost. So I told him, and he said, oh, what are you going to be, a fat lesbian now? Because my weight fluctuates. I say that like I have no say in the matter, but you know what I mean? But I was like, you know what? I think I just might be. That's going to be better than this. So I was really making a statement for honesty and fidelity, and that I was going to end the marriage the mature way, the right way, the way I would want to model for my kids. And so that's what I meant, I think, by that.
Yeah. I think this is helpful because, listen, I'm taking a lot of guesses, Valerie. I haven't been in the position of coming out. So I'm using my imagination a lot, but I don't know. I'm also using stories that I've heard from my friends who have gone through this. And I've often heard this pressure be placed on people. Like you owe it to your family to be honest with them, or you owe it to your parents for them to know who you really are before they die. And fine, maybe a person may feel that way inside, but I'm not sure it's fair to put that on a person or impose that on a person. And so I wanted to clarify, you weren't trying to do this honesty thing for someone else. You were doing right. This honesty thing for you.
Correct. Because it's integrity. Mm-hmm. It's how I want to be. It's how I am proud of myself. It was in the face of me kind of suspecting this infidelity for actually, since right after I had had my first child. So it was like over a decade of me, or almost a decade of me, knowing about this affair, but not really knowing in terms of evidence. So, you know, I am not that way. And so I was really wanting to behave in a way that I would be proud of, that I thought, you know, that I think everybody should, you know. It's easy to cheat on someone, you know, and get, you know, the best of both worlds from the person who is your spouse and helps pay for healthcare and all that stuff. Right. So, yeah, I did it for myself, because I didn't want to stoop in that same way.
Yeah.
And I also wasn't going to do that to get involved with a new woman or a new person, but this, you know, a new woman in a way that lacked integrity and honesty from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you ever scared?
No, I was too excited. I was too excited. I have an older sister who's 2.5 years older than me and a younger brother who's 6 years younger, and they're amazing people. They're both straight, and yet they're just really, really have hearts that are focused on fairness and equity and let people tell you who they are and honoring that. And then my parents, I was just amazingly lucky because they were loving. You know, my dad was, he passed away in October. So I use was, but my dad was super loving, although super conservative. And I use that word carefully because I know that can mean something really on the far end of the kind of right wing spectrum. But he was, you know, he was, when I came out to him, I was the girl in high school in the early 90s that did all the musicals, and I had many gay friends, and I grew up watching Madonna's Blonde Ambition tour, and you know, she had her entourage of members of the LGBTQ community in her circle, and I always really, as a 17-year-old, I was like, I'm like that too, you know. So I had, my parents were around a lot of my friends who were members of that community, and I was just, you know, their straight friend in their mind, as opposed to bisexual. You know, they, I think my mom knew. I think I was always really open with my mom, and almost in a way that just to make her shocked and make her laugh. She'd be like, oh, Valerie, oh my gosh, you know. But my dad, when I told my dad that I was dating, it was about a year. I had ended the relationship with this woman, and I was dating other women. And one of those women lived sort of nearby my parents' house. And so I was like, you know, can you watch the kids while I go on this date? And then I said, Dad, and they were like, of course, of course. And I said, Dad, I want to tell you something, because my mom had already known. My mom knew about the woman in Florida. And I said, I'm dating a woman. It's a woman that I'm going out with. And he goes, oh, shit. And I was like, what, Dad? And he's like, I don't want you to be a lesbian. And I was like, why, Dad? I'm like, now we have something more in common. And I thought he would pick up on it. He was like, what? And I said, well, you know, we like the ladies. That just made him uncomfortable. But, I gave him that grace, because honestly, and I've said this to him, and I've said this before to other people, that sometimes I think coming out is hard. And when we think about it, it's depending on the person, depending on the parents, it's hard because they have a discomfort in actually just seeing their kids as a sexual being in any capacity, right? So when I was young and I started, you know, dating boys, when I was a teenager, I didn't sit him down and say, Dad, I'm attracted to this boy. I want to, you know, I'm sexually attracted to boys. You know, you don't have that conversation because it's not necessary. And it's just a given. It's automatically assumed that's who you're going to be. So I kind of gave him that, the benefit of the doubt. And then a couple of days later, he texted me that he was sorry for his reaction, and that, you know, it wasn't how, he wasn't proud of it, and it's not how he would ever think that would go. So that was really nice. And I told him, it's, you know, it's fine, Dad. I know who you are, and I know you love me. So I can't even remember what the initial question was. Oh, was I ever afraid? Right.
Yeah.
Now I remember.
Yeah. And I guess I'm imagining, I don't know, I'm making something up here, but like, let's say a 15-year-old approaches you and says, I want to talk to you because I trust you, Valerie. I think I'm gay, and I'm too scared to tell my parents. I don't think that they're going to accept me or love me, or they might kick me out. You know, there are some folks out there who would jump right in with, no, you got to go tell them. It'll be fine. And I worry about those well-meaning moments where we think we're just coaching someone or cheerleading them, or we're saying like, I'm in your corner, but let's go do it. Come on. I worry that some folks don't appreciate just how Well, scary is one option. It could be scary, but also potentially risky and dangerous for someone, it may be. So I just wonder if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I am a counselor at a school, and I have had students, you know, come to me and tell me they're gay. And, you know, maybe it's because I'm a counselor, and this part of my work is that it's all about patience and energy and just meeting the person where they are and letting them feel it out and letting them determine their timeline. I had a student several years ago now, maybe a decade ago, come to me and share with me about her therapist. And this was definitely a well-meaning, well-intended phenomenon, but was really harmful. So I wasn't even the student's counselor, but she came to me and she had said she was having some gender identity confusion. And she used that word. And I'm using the pronoun she, because I know that that's what she uses now at this point in her life. And at that point, she was toying with the idea of using they, them. And she had a kind of neutral, gender neutral nickname that students were calling her, but her parents didn't know and the faculty didn't know. But, you know, she came to me and shared with me that her therapist was really pushing her to transition, and that she thought she might be trans at a certain time, but through therapy, she realized that she was just, I mean, and through weeks and weeks of therapy and then coming and sharing with me what she kind of came upon in herself over talking it through, but that she was really actually not trans, but she was so tired of being overly sexualized by her mother, who was super kind of old school, traditionally feminine, you know, lots of Botox, breast implants. You know, she was always being told that by her mother, you know, you should show more legs, your cleavage is coming in so nicely, like all of these things that are just, were just making her completely uncomfortable and rebelling against this notion of femininity. And then she came to me to confide in me then, not only about her parent, but about her therapist, who was saying, we need to talk about puberty blockers. We need to talk about getting you, you know, an appointment to talk about socially transitioning and then maybe medically transitioning. And this person, this girl was 12 years old. And I said, listen, whatever, whoever you are, that's for you to find out on your own timetable. And I imagine that this therapist really means well and is trying to help you see that she accepts you for whoever you are and that she's quote unquote okay with it and inclusive of it and celebrates the trans community and all that. But if you are not saying that you are trans, and this is her own kind of baggage, professional baggage, philosophical baggage. I don't know that I use the word baggage with this child, but it's not centered around you, I remember saying, even though she probably thinks it is and means it to be. So in the end, you know, she worked through a lot of stuff, and I don't know if she's still seeing the counselor, but that was definitely something that I found really worrisome and was a big red flag, because one person was really trying to explore and she needed to play explore, conclude. So that's something that just kind of popped up for me as you were talking about somebody coming to an adult and trying to get guidance.
It's a great example. I think it highlights the kind of thing that comes up a lot, even if the example isn't about a child or isn't about somebody who's struggling with identity. I still think those times where you say to your friend, oh, come on, you can do this. I'll do it with you. I'll be by your side. Go tell your parents, or let's come out to our whole friend group. And I think sometimes it's rooted in, I really want to be the cool ally. I really want to be the help. I want to be the progressive, open-minded, justice-oriented sidekick to the gay person. So like, let me help launch you. And when we do that to people, who are either not ready or are potentially in some really risky situations. I mean, there are some, unfortunately, there are some home lives that are really dangerous. And so I just want to caution the helpers out there to rein it in a little bit, because your well-meaning attempt to kind of nudge somebody to coming out could really be putting them at risk.
At risk and giving them a sense of anxiety, probably, and panic, right? You know, when somebody confides something, oftentimes we just want somebody to bear witness to us and know, hey, I might not need A, B, and C now, but I need this now. I need you to listen. I need to know that our relationship is solid, that you love me. And I don't need you to, you know, make my decisions for me. And it is, yeah, I mean, people have been disowned, people have been, resources are taken away, people feel then, you know, are exposed to shame and degradation from the people who are supposed to take care of them and keep them safe. And it's a process of, the thing about coming out is it's a process then that's ever evolving, and continual through the lifetime, right? So
yeah,
people are constantly coming out depending on what context they're in and with new people. And there's so much at stake, and it's not a belief system like it can be for an ally. You know, I remember standing up for a friend when I was 16 years old. I might have been 15 or 16. I was at my part-time job after school at McDonald's. And my gay friend who came from another school, who came from another town, was in there visiting because I always gave away free food. And we were chatting, and then a bunch of students from his high school came in, and they were in their football uniforms or costumes, whatever they're called. And a bunch of them called him a faggot. And I remember being really livid and enraged, and I just yelled at them, you know, you've got to get out of here. You have to get out. Don't come back. How dare you talk to him like that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I felt really great and proud of myself in the moment. And then later that night, I was like, huh, did I just send him back into like the worst lion's den the next day? I mean, it's confusing because you have to stand up. You have to be an upstander in the moment when you see somebody being ridiculed or, you know, who knows what could have happened in the parking lot. And that's what I was thinking too. And I had gotten the manager, and the manager, thank God, I mean, this was like 1991, sided with me and said, you know, you have to get out of here too. You know, we don't accept this kind of language or something like that. And, but I was really mouthy, and I was really like proud of it. And I, you know, I wasn't subtle. I didn't say one thing, you know, it wasn't brief and concise. It was very like histrionic and exciting for me. I remember my teeth always chatter when I'm really excited about something. And I remember my teeth were chattering like a mile a minute in that moment. And my friend was like, oh my God, Valerie. And, you know, it is just dangerous on so many levels. And there's instant danger, you know, physical danger, instant danger. And then there's like long-term danger, because as the news trickles out, you know, who is in your community that you can count on? Who did you think you could count on? And now is, you know, digesting your story or your news in a way that causes them to pull away from you. And perhaps that was one of your safe spaces in that person.
And I'm sorry I got distracted for a moment when you called the football players' outfits costumes. Because a part of me was like, that's probably the best jab you could have sent their way. It's like, nice costumes, guys.
Right. And that's terrible, because I know that there are some allies in the football community and some, you know, gay brothers and sisters in the football community.
Yeah.
But at that time, I was like, not having it with these football players. You know,
well, for about 10 seconds, I was laughing in my head at you calling them costumes. And then I was like, get it together, Kate. The story is actually really serious and really important, and you need to focus. I just have one other question. And I'm kind of, I don't know. Do you think that you and I will live to see the day when a person doesn't really have to come out?
I think it's happening a little now.
Yeah.
I mean, I teach human growth and development. And just this past fall, these fourth graders were like, oh yeah, my uncle's trans. Oh yeah, my caretaker is lesbian. Oh yeah. And it's just, oh, okay. And the only reason it came up was because we were doing like identity circles. You know, we were doing this kind of exercise where, you know, you put your name in the center and then you have a center circle, and then you have these outer circles where you put one part of your identity that's really salient for you. It could be positive or negative, but it's how either what you carry as being really important about yourself or what you feel you're carrying because others put that on you. And, you know, we were talking about race and gender and religion and, you know, even skill set. You know, they're at this, as kids, there's a lot of, you know, well, I'm a soccer player, I'm a pianist, you know. And I always model myself. I use my own stories. I share things about my life that are not personal or private and always for an educational purpose. But, you know, I definitely think because I, you know, there are so many straight couples and there are so many straight teachers. There's so many straight families in school communities that I think it's really important to say when you're not in. So when I had said, you know, I, in one of my circles, I had put lesbian, another circle, I had counselor, another circle, I had white, you know, and then it's just important because a lot of kids are like, it's just another factor. It's just another feature. And yet on the other end of that spectrum, there is still so much, you know, in 2 years, those same kids will probably be calling each other gay or possibly because they go through this metamorphosis in adolescence where in a way it's wild. It's actually wild. Like the new way of rebelling is through sometimes hate speech. You know, when I got out of grad school, you and I knew each other in grad school, I was still at a point in my career where a lot of the students were not talking about race or gender or sexual orientation in class. And they were so excited and thrilled to have a grown-up talk about it with them, not talk about it to them or at them, but with them. And now I think it's this double-edged sword because there's so much talk about DEI issues in justice and equity in the media, on social media, in the news, everywhere. And there's so much training. It's common vernacular now and common conversation, which is really important and great. But at the same time, sometimes I feel like because it's so expected and important and part of the educational process now, that students, adolescents rebel against it by acting ignorant, saying ignorant things, saying hateful things, you know, as a quote unquote joke. And so I'm hoping that the work is deep and the seed is planted and it's more long-term and longitudinal, and that these are phases that people go through. And that the education throughout those years does impact them actually in who they are, informing who they are, and that that's not them solidifying their story, but we really have to intervene constantly. So I think yes, and I think no. I think people, because also the adults who are hateful and homophobics or bigoted or racist, they're raising their children and grandchildren. So it's tricky.
Yeah.
To say the least.
I mean, you've got my wheels turning a little bit because, I guess I'm thinking if folks are raising their children or grandchildren in values that are not loving, they're hateful, they're bigoted, they're unjust. I imagine you're right that that wouldn't come up in the moment when someone's trying to rebel, when they're trying to get an adult's attention and really shock everyone, they're going to say the things that they know in their hearts are wrong, because that gets everybody's, that makes the record stop. And so in a weird way, it is almost like this is a signal that they know this is some of the worst stuff you can do. And they know, well, do that if you really want to push against the system. It's kind of like when I was a little kid and I said a curse word. It's not because I thought it was a good word to say. It's because I knew it was a bad word to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was the whole reason I said it, was because I knew it was so wrong.
Unfortunately, impact then on others, like your peer group outside of you, is going to be harmed and not actually know, oh, he's just joking, and that's actually funny. So what's the punchline? Or not actually know, wow, am I safe with this person? Does this person really mean it? And there's also the whole phenomenon of adolescents just acting one way, one-on-one, and then when they're in the group, it's like this performative quality. And so a lot of times they don't know who they're dealing with, which one is the real you. And it's super scary, especially if you have younger students, and you know, the egocentric way of adolescence is that we are all, you know, we almost don't notice what's going on around us, you know. And if you have, you know, hateful comments or terrible jokes that aren't jokes at all happening, and unbeknownst to them, there's a group of second graders or fourth graders walking by. These are the old hip kids. These are the kids that I'm looking up to. Or, you know, I'm constantly saying, you know, you are public all the time. And if you know, your friends might know they're safe, or you're just joking, quote unquote. You don't have the relationship with the seven other, you know, 9 year olds who just walked by who don't know you. And they might see, okay, that's a flag of danger. That's a red flag. And so it's really important for, it's actually really important for upstanders, allies, to do the stuff in the moment, to interrupt and intervene, dismantle in the moment, as opposed to putting it on the marginalized person, historically, the marginalized person, to get stuff done and tell everybody who they are. So we've got to pave the way to make sure people are safe to do that when they're ready to do that, and only then.
It sounds like a whole other episode of being an upstander. And so when I reach out to you and ask you to do that episode, please don't feel any pressure. You can say no to me. But I've been dreaming for a long time of doing an episode around, like, talking to kids about race, because I know I can think of all the well-meaning messages that were taught to me when I was a child, you know, that we're all the same on the inside and we shouldn't see race. Yeah. And this colorblind racism was taught to me, I think, from a good place, but was harmful.
Yeah. And it's from a good place when we think about it, because we know these people in our lives who mean well, and they love us, and they took care of us, and they are good people and all of that. But it's also from a place, I think, of self-preservation and protection. You know, if race does matter, if we are different, then what does that mean? You know, what kind of inventory do I need to do on how I've related to people and how I've treated people my whole life? Yeah. And if it's colorblind, then I'm safe. You know, if we can be colorblind, then I'm safe. I don't have to take any kind of account of anything. And everybody else is just too sensitive, or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. You'll be hearing from me.
All right. I forgot.
Thank you so much for doing this. Is there anything that you didn't get to say that you would really like to say before we wrap up?
No, I don't know. I mean, I think that, I don't know. I don't know what your, the age of your listeners are, but I would say, like, life is amazing when you can tell your own story and live your own story, and to just keep cultivating those spaces of safety. And, I mean, you don't need a PSA. I guess I want to say that I'm just really happy now, and it's fun being a lesbian, and it's fun being a grown-up lesbian, and it's fun being engaged. I'm engaged to a woman who's really amazing, and it's super exciting. So thanks for letting me kind of take inventory of my own experiences. It's been a lot of years, I guess.
it's been fun reconnecting with you and meeting like a whole new you too, which is cool.
Thank you. Right.
Yeah.
Since that day, I live in a dream.